Where'd you find this?
As they say in NBA Jam, he's heating up.
Tell Craig. Me who's heating up, Ryan.
Oh my God. Dude, what did I tell you about Sam Laporta?
Listen, I don't want to be the reactionary guy, but like that game checked every box that we needed to see in game one, right? Patrick Mahomes is still him. You don't want any KC wide receivers. Jahmyr Gibbs is the truth. Sam Laporta's one of the best tight ends going forward.
The one guy that was disappointing, though, who I thought would get a lot more involved was McKinnon. Freaking whopping 110-yard reception.
You know what, though? He was open, man. That touchdown to Rashee Rice could have easily gone to Jerick McKinnon.
True, true.
I think the thing
I thought he would at least get like 4 or 5 catches. Sorry, Shane.
No, it's okay. I think the thing with that game is, right, like, this is the fantasy sphere versus the NFL sphere. Like, everybody getting fucking mad that, like, yes, Gibbs was electric, but also you got to remember these teams are like vying for the playoffs, right? They're trying to preserve their weapons and rotate these guys and use them appropriately. We're like, Jerick McKinnon is 31 years old, right? You kind of have to utilize him in a way where, hey, we don't really need you right now for your skill set because, number one, the lead kept changing where they didn't have to run the 2-minute drill or the hurry up offense consistently. Right. So they didn't have to utilize his skill set. Granted, he was probably the most reliable pass catcher on that team that day. But they didn't really have to utilize him because there was no purpose for it. It was such a weird tug of war for momentum in the game.
Yeah, it was. It was a hell of a game. Got to give kudos to the Lions for playing their fucking asses off.
There was a moment in that game for probably like 10 minutes where I was like, this offense looks unstoppable. Like they like the momentum and they were just clicking and then they kind of took a downhill and like slowed down a lot. I'm excited about them this year.
I really liked the way Montgomery looked. They used him just how we thought they were going to use him. He got the goal line situation. He had that really nice touchdown. What was a 15, 20 yard run in the red zone.
It just shows you, man, like someone made a good analogy. He's the pinball player, right? You just put him up the gut and have him bounce off a bunch of guys and see if he comes out of the hole. If you need 3 yards, that's what he's going to give you. But sometimes there's upside, right? Like where people are getting mad about it. I'm like, where have you been? Like, I hate it to like tell it, like have my I told you so cap on my head all game. But I'm like, we literally, fantasy analysts and us included, have been saying like, both of these guys are going to be able to eat and they're both going to have these specific roles. Don't worry about the touch share. They will both get theirs in their own way. It's just game one. And both dudes looked fucking great.
It was a great way to start the season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it was a great game to start the season. Can we just say, too, that if Kadarius Toney didn't play, Chiefs would have won that game?
I saw a stat that said that he had, like, -2 points per play because of like how clutch his drops were, because they were all either downfield or on third down and one was a pick six. So if you follow that model of expected points added, if you threw to Kadarius Toney 3 times, it resulted in 6 points for the other team.
I love the picture I saw on whatever, I was probably on Twitter earlier today, and it's just a picture of that one pass that was like the worst drop and the ball was literally in his hands with his arms stretched out. And it just says at the bottom, something like the Lions defense scored a touchdown on this play.
right.
Like I'm not a Kadarius Toney fan, right? Like I will meme about the guy. He's a funny bit, but like you do have to put in the context of like his usage, right? Like he was like very terribly atrocious last night. Right. But they've shown that they want to utilize him with his snap share, the way they scheme him. But you kind of also have to give a little bit of forgiveness here, because like how many snaps has he played with Mahomes in the last year, right? Like he got traded halfway through the season. He got hurt. He played in like 2 games in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. He missed most of camp, right? So like he's still rusty. He's not in, I know that's like one of the hardest schemes in the NFL to learn too. So like I know, Tony, you said you're going to keep putting money down because they're going to utilize him and he's going to score eventually, because like the usage is there. They're not just going to cut bait and be right. like, this guy sucks, we need to go find someone off the wire. Like they've spent capital to get this guy. They're going to make sure that he's not Sky Moore.
I think it's I will be putting money on a Kadarius Toney anytime touchdown next week, because when you have a player that you gave up capital for, you're going to give him every opportunity to be successful.
True. But they should have just paid that defensive player and picked up Hopkins.
No shit. They should have done anything.
Yeah. I was reading online.
Dude, Tony, Kadarius Tony had to cancel his Twitter account. He was getting so much shit today.
Yeah.
That's freaking wild.
It was actually down before the game, I believe, because I was looking up on Twitter on halftime just to see.
Oh, like, really?
To pull up like the jokes when he was talking shit to all the Giants fans, and like his Twitter was deleted like before halftime.
Leadership wise on Mahomes' part, it was really good of him to come out and be like, look, this guy's part of the team, he's gonna get better, you know. But he did say like to all the rookies that are on this team and all the new players are on this team, he's like, just because you're in the Chiefs and we show up doesn't mean we're gonna win, you gotta work.
Yeah. And just for all fellow Bears fans, this is what Patrick Mahomes looks like if the Bears drafted him instead of Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, where, right?
Like, he's just brilliant and everything around him is just dog shit.
Right.
Just dog shit. So let's hop in. Season's here. Let's do our first in-season numbers, guys. Ryan, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So we're on 98 this week. I want to talk about a pretty famous defensive end. Played for St. Louis Rams and Seahawks. Let's talk about Grant Wistrom.
Oh, okay. Another Nebraska guy, huh?
Yeah, dude. This guy's got all the Nebraska Huskers like records. I almost said recipes.
We'll talk recipes and my guy.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. That could be a potential segment, too. Share a recipe for football. We want to cook on football Sunday.
Any Madden recipe will fucking die at the end of the podcast.
TH Fantasy Munchies. But yeah, Grant Wistrom, as Tony said, went to University of Nebraska from 94 to 97. And he lucked into a really good team. And I'm sure it had a lot to do with him being on the team too. But so his four-year college career, guess the Huskers' record in that 4 years.
I would say like 40-4.
Nope. 49-2.
Damn. Jeez.
They won 3 national championships too with him on the team.
Did he? He must have played with Lawrence Phillips and what's his name? The quarterback.
Yeah, most likely. In the 97 season, he got the Lombardi Award for being the top lineman. So he's listed at 6'5, 255 pounds. He finished that year with 51 tackles, 8.5 sacks, 17 for a loss. All right. He did a lot of great shit. Defensive end of all-time Cornhusker team. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame, inducted in 2009. 96 and 97, he was all Big 12 Conference first team. Same year, he was also a Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He even had academic all Big 12 honors as well.
Damn.
So he was not just a football player. He had some brains. He has some brains. He's still alive. Sorry.
Okay.
So let's see. In 98, the Rams drafted him as the 6th overall pick. Immediately, right off the bat, signed a 6-year around $13 million contract. Pretty great for a rookie. 99, the Rams won the Super Bowl, obviously. So he got a ring with that. His career best year was 2000. 71 tackles, 11 sacks, 29 quarterback pressures, and 4 passes defended. 1 forced fumble. Also tying for 7th in the NFC for sacks that year.
Okay.
Then he went on to play with the Seattle Seahawks. 2 Super Bowl appearances. Yeah, 1 with St. Louis and 1 with the Seahawks, right?
Yeah, is that the one they lost to Pittsburgh?
I think so.
That would make sense on the timeline. We lived together during that Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. Really quick, he logged his first sack in the NFL, and guess who it was on?
Brett Favre.
Eric Kramer.
Close. It's a Hall of Famer. Steve Young.
Hey.
1998, October 25th. He made his first interception in the NFL and returned it 91 yards for a touchdown in 1999.
That's sick.
At the time, the interception return was the sixth longest in Rams franchise history and the longest ever by a Rams defensive lineman. It probably still is the longest by a Rams defensive lineman, but I don't think it's the longest interception return anymore. But sure, you can't get much further than 91 yards.
It's true.
But he does a lot of charity work too, which is what I like about this guy. And he's got a really nice pediatric cancer foundation. And they actually take, it's called the Circle of Friends. They take kids up to Wisconsin every year in the winter. I thought they would do like in the summer to like go swimming and stuff, but they do it in the winter. So they do like skiing and disco bowling. It says snowmobiling. They just take the kids out and have a grand old time.
That's fun. Hell yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. And he does a lot of stuff still with the University of Nebraska, 'cause he's a Hall of Fame member there. But, yeah, shout out to Grant Wistrom, great NFL player and charitable man.
Super Bowl champ.
You always got to respect people that respect the kids.
Absolutely. True. Gotta get back to your community.
That's right.
All right, Shane, you want to give us recipes?
Yeah, so my guy, I know we've been talking restaurants, sandwiches. My guy's a...
Ooh, hell yeah.
He's not really a sandwich, but he is a food item. My guy is Terrence Pot Roast Knighton.
Oh, that's yeah.
That's literally his middle name.
No, his nickname is.
Awesome.
So Pot Roast was a two-sport athlete in high school, playing tight end and defensive end, while also being All-State in basketball. So I'm not sure like how big he was in high school, because in the NFL, Pot Roast was listed at 6'3", 355.
Woo!
So he's probably like Ryan's guy last week, where he was probably just a really big guy who's just super hard to box out and very slow to get to back on defense.
Yeah.
Really quick, Shane, too, if you thought last week's guy was big, wait till we get to my next guy.
We're going size off. So he would only get one scholarship from Temple University, where he'd end up going, where in his career there, he would rack up 77 solo tackles, 7 fumbles, a blocked kick, and a sack.
Okay.
So Pot Roast was the first person in Temple University history to make first team all Mid-American Conference.
Damn, this guy's making me hungry.
So in 2009, with rising stock prior to the draft, Pot Roast was drafted to the Jags 72nd overall, where most analytics called him a gamble, a reach, someone who has weight issues and too much downside for a third round pick, per Tony Pauline of Sports Illustrated. So, big ol' hater of our boy here.
Fuck that.
So, in his rookie season, coach Jack Del Rio said that Pot Roast was going to be a great player, and he was named team captain towards the end of the 2009 season, saying that he was basically a leader of men. He's one of the people we want to have in the forefront. So now you're probably wondering why Terrence got the nickname Pot Roast. In his rookie season, while on a late night flight, the attendant was reading off orders going, "Pot Roast, Pot Roast," and Terrence exclaimed, "Right here." Former linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars and longtime friend. Hold on, I lost his name. My bad. Anyways, I'll bring it back at the end. He basically says, "You said that's like your name, so I'm just going to call you Pot Roast from now on." And I think we all have that friend where we refer to them by some weird nickname that has like no significance whatsoever and just kind of sticks.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
So during his tenure in Jacksonville, Pot Roast would be in a nightclub altercation in 2012 that would leave him requiring eye surgery to remove a cataract. It would take a while to come back to heal, and it would make him wear a dark visor at all times while through the rest of his career. So he'd walk in free agency and follow former coach Jack Del Rio to the Broncos, where he'd help take Denver to the Super Bowl, where they would end up getting their ass beat 43-8. And during the media before the Super Bowl, Pot Roast would admit that he only had Pot Roast 2 times in his life. on the plane in Jacksonville where he earned his nickname because the other option was Shrimp Linguini. And at a massive team dinner where he bought everybody on the Super Bowl team pot roasts.
I'm glad he stuck with pot roasts and not Shrimp Linguini.
Oh, yeah. He would have definitely been like the scene in Airplane.
That's a less intimidating football name. Shrimp Dude, Linguini. Shrimp Linguini's out on the field. What? Who?
So he'd end up playing his final season in Washington before being signed to the Pats for 5 months, where he'd be a casualty in final cuts. Pot roast then now ties into Nebraska because he would retire in 2016 to go on to coach. He'd coach as an assistant under Matt Rhule in 2021 and follow Rhule to Nebraska, where he is currently the defensive lineman coach.
Oh, there you go.
Cool.
And he also gives back to charity too. I know he does like a Thanksgiving fundraiser, and he feeds families during Thanksgiving.
He gives them shrimp linguine.
Nice.
No,
they stuff the turkey with the shrimp linguine.
So pot roast is going to be on the field this week against Colorado and Shader Sanders. It's going to be something else. I'm really looking forward to that game tomorrow. Nebraska and Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling Deion Sanders' team's going to just kill the Nebraska Cornhuskers, but we'll see.
For the record, you had a feeling that Detroit was going to win, and I believe you picked them in your work confidence pool, didn't you?
I did. It was only my two-point game, but I took the gamble. And when it, dude, some people had their 16 points on Kansas City last night. I laughed in their faces this morning.
Excuse me, can you come over here?
That was like first thing I did when I walked into work and went to my cubicle. I was like, how about them Lions? Everyone was like, God damn it. There was only one other person that picked Detroit. It was my uncle.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go with my 98 here. My original plan was to talk about the tragic beach football Pro Bowl injury that derailed Patriots rookie running back Robert Edwards' career. But like, I wrote that during like the depressing summer months, and since football is fucking back, let's just talk about a dude that ripped shit up in 1998.
Sweet.
We're going to talk about Randy Moss's rookie season.
Does this so he wasn't a part of the Super Bowl in 98 then, was he?
That is correct.
Okay.
So I don't really want to do a whole biography on Randy Moss, but we have to do a little bit of backstory to explain how he got to Minnesota. He was always the clearly like the best player on any football field. But I remember as a young kid, you know, I was 12 the year he was drafted. I remember that he was the big thing was like he had character concerns when he was a prospect. So he was off a lot of teams' boards. So I decided to find out what that stuff was. And let me tell you, it's some bullshit. My friends.
Really?
Yeah, so he's in high school, and he's in one of those, like, special schools that are just there for sports. Sure. And so he signed a letter of intent to go play ball in Notre Dame, which was, like, his dream. But it was revoked when he backed up his friend. So there was a kid who was saying racist shit to his friend, and his friend beat this kid's ass, and Randy Moss kicked this dude a couple times in the fight. And spent 2 nights in jail after pleading guilty to misdemeanor battery and got expelled.
Ugh. Wow.
I'm going to have to go ahead and take the bold stance that I'm on Randy's side here. Because, like, kicking the shit out of a racist dude, like, I just don't feel too terrible about that.
Yeah, you kind of fuck around and find out, right?
Right? Yep. So Notre Dame pulls his enrollment. But since he was technically on Notre Dame for a minute, he was allowed to transfer to Florida State, but had to redshirt for a full season. While redshirting and on probation for the fight, he failed a drug test for weed and had to spend 60 days in jail and was kicked off the team.
Wow.
That's his character concerns. He didn't sexually assault anybody. He didn't, like, beat up a homeless person. He smokes weed and kicks the shit out of racists. Like, that to me is like, I want that guy on my team, you know? So he transfers, he goes Division II, he goes to Marshall, because that was the only way that he could get out of not losing another year of eligibility after being kicked off Florida State. So as a redshirt freshman, he catches 28 touchdowns.
Jesus Christ.
He's the best kickoff. He's the best kickoff returner in Division II. And after taking 4 years off, he posted a 200-meter dash time that was 0.02 seconds behind the all-time conference record.
Holy crap.
The next year, he catches only 26 touchdowns. He refuses to go to the combine, but he goes to Marshall's Pro Day and has a vertical of 47 inches and a clocked 40 times somewhere unofficially between 4.24 and 4.28.
Jesus God. Christ.
With a 47-inch vertical. So he falls to the 21st pick in the 1998 NFL draft to Minnesota, and it's all because of these character issues. The one that hurt Moss the most was Dallas, since Moss grew up a Cowboys fan, but Jerry Jones, who we all know is a man of high character, said that he couldn't draft a guy with character issues to his team, which is one of the most ironic statements of all time.
We should ask his new AI simulator what happened there.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? They could have had the tail end of his career. They could have had Michael Irvin and Randy Moss on the same team.
Damn.
Maybe that's why Dallas is cursed now.
So check this out. First game, first NFL game, 4 catches, 95 yards, 2 touchdowns. He caught a touchdown in 11 of 16 games that season.
Nice.
And 2 of those 11 were 2 touchdown games. And he had back-to-back 3 touchdown games.
Jesus Christ.
Oh.
The first of those 3 touchdown games was Thanksgiving against the Dallas Cowboys, who, after being passed in the draft, Randy Moss decided he was going to take it personally and annihilate them every time they went head-to-head.
You love spite, right? Spite's a good motivator.
Spite's my favorite. His stat line from that game is absolutely iconic. 3 catches, 163 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Ooh. 3 catches?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. So he averaged over 50 yards a catch and a touchdown every time he touched the ball.
That's ridiculous.
Randy Moss was very obviously Rookie of the Year that year. He was actually also, I looked it up, he was the fantasy wide receiver 1 that season, and it wasn't even close.
Of course.
If you haven't watched specifically 1998 Randy Moss, it's an absolute sight to behold. And in my time watching football, the only receivers that I can remember ever making it look that easy were peak Calvin Johnson and peak Julio Jones. Like,
yeah,
he was just like within 3 games, they were calling it mossing people. So yeah. I have his final stat line if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
124 targets, 69 catches, 1,313 yards, 19 yards per catch, and 17 touchdowns.
Jesus.
So this is, of course, the Minnesota team that famously went 15-1. Their quarterback was Randall Cunningham. They had Chris Carter, John Randall, friend of the pod. Mm-hmm. They had Jake Reed, who I consider one of the best wide receiver threes of all time. And Robert Smith, who was one of the most underrated running backs of all time as well, Ohio State legend. They broke the team scoring record that year with a regular season total of 556 points, which is an
God.
It's an average of 34.75 points per game.
That is ridiculous.
And if you'll recall, they lost in the NFC Championship to Atlanta because their kicker, who hadn't missed a kick all year, missed a field goal that sent it into overtime and they lost. So fuck you, Vikings. And that is the story of 1998 Randy fucking Moss. One of the greatest wide receiver seasons of all time, but easily the best rookie wide receiver season we've ever seen.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Love me some Randy Moss.
He was the fucking man. You see, you like those highlights, there's like 2 guys covering them. It doesn't fucking matter.
See, like in that time too, like this is before my era of football, we're like the defensive people good, or was he just like racking up like on people who we talk about just for like a meme, right?
No, he rookie and even shit, even up through like those Patriots teams, Randy Moss was like, you set all of his sliders up to 100 and you set all the computer sliders down to like 50. Like, he was just that much better than everybody else.
Right.
He just did whatever he wanted.
That rules.
All right.
Take us home, baby.
All right, let's round it out. Want to talk about the late, great Goose, Tony Siragusa.
The Goose.
Fortunately, he's no longer with us. As we all know, he died last year, actually.
Yep.
Nothing traumatic, just says that he died in his sleep. So at least we think he went peaceful. But as I was telling Shane earlier, you thought last week's guy was big? This guy at his peak playing career was listed at 6'3", 340 pounds.
God damn.
It's a big man.
That's right. I think, you know, he had a pretty okay career. But he's more known for like his announcing and it's just his like personality and stuff after the game or after he was done with his playing career. But right. with a guy this big, he went to high school in New Jersey. Not only did he play football, but he was on the wrestling team and his record at that high school is 97-1.
Well, yeah, when you're that big, how does anybody beat you? Right? It doesn't even matter if you have technique or not.
Well, and I tried to find out like who's the guy that he lost to or like how did he lose? I couldn't find anything.
Brock Lesnar.
No, cuz we know that Brock Lesnar is from Bismarck, North Dakota.
That's true.
See? The more you know. He also get this. But he played football in high school. He's a defensive line, but he was the place kicker and the punter as well.
Some people just do it all, dude.
He averaged 39-yard punt average, not that great, and he made 15 of 18 extra point attempts. So
that's reasonable.
Sounded like they just didn't have a kicker, and he was like, "I'll try it.
I'll do it. Whatever.
Just love the game." So he went to the University of Pittsburgh. And then his last year there, he tore his ACL. So, like, his draft stock totally went down to the point to where he was an undrafted free agent in 1990. They must have not thought that a guy that big could come back from an ACL injury that great, you know?
Yeah.
He was drafted by the Colts originally as a nose tackle. They put him at nose tackle, even though he was a defensive player.
Plug him up.
But as a rookie, he was in 13 games, started 6, 36 total tackles on defense and a fumble recovery. Oh, yeah, he was part of the Colts team that lost the 1995 AFC Championship game.
To Pittsburgh, right?
I believe so.
Dude, all this Pittsburgh talk just keeps coming back.
Yeah, and he didn't. And the Colts, for some reason, didn't like him. They didn't give him a raise or extension after being there for, like, 5 years. So he just straight up left the team. He was like, screw you.
Good for him.
Yeah. And in 97, he's famously signed. We all know him better as playing for the Ravens. At least I do, in my mind. So that season, he had 41 total tackles. 99, he had 3.5 sacks and 36 total tackles. He was a part of the 2000 Baltimore Ravens defense that allowed the fewest total points in NFL history for a 16-game season.
Yep.
That defense. Do you remember what that... Yeah, right? It doesn't say what the total points was, but...
I know... hang on. The points against was... 165, so an average of 10.3 points a game.
That is crazy.
Misery.
Right. But like, look at who they had on their defense, man. They had Ray Lewis. Future Hall of Famer Rod Woodson in his later years. Chris McAllister was an all-star. Peter Boulware was an all-star. Sam Adams was also a fucking all-star. Jamie Sharper, like, everyone on that defense was a fucking monster.
Yep. Yeah, and that year in 2000, they won Super Bowl 35. They beat the Giants 34-7. And he retired the season after that. He finished his career, 22 sacks, 562 tackles, 5 forced fumbles, 9 fumble recoveries, 28 pass deflections in 170 career games. So,
damn.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about 11 seasons.
By the way, Shannon Sharp was the tight end for that Ravens team.
That's right. And we all know his famous career after football as being one of those sideline announcers. He was just a really cool presence on the field. And, you know, he didn't offer too much to the thing, but it would just, I remember watching some of it. They would just cut to him and he'd just be this big, jolly old guy on the side telling what's going on. And let's see, he did a bunch of shows like after that too. He was in a movie where he played a Russian mobster called the 25th Hour. He was an advocate for prostate cancer.
Hell yeah, he was pro prostate cancer.
Yeah,
milk me.
Yeah, he's just an all around good NFL football personality. I enjoyed watching the banter back and forth. I just famously remember because he did Bucks games, he did Ravens games. He was just a cool presence to have on the sideline. Really good guy. But ultimately, I think his size led to his death when, let's see, he was only 55 when he died. Just couldn't stop eating, I guess. But, That's Goose. That's Mr. Tony Siragusa.
Hey, you know, he also had that really famous, people still argue about it, whether it was dirty or not, his hit on Rich Gannon in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. He got fined like 10 grand for that.
Yeah, and he knocked out the Raiders starting quarterback in the conference championship. And a lot of people were like, yo, he's the reason that the Raiders didn't get a chance because they were like the best team in the league that year.
No,
well, was that the year before they played Tampa Bay?
No, so that was 2000. That was the 2000 season, and then the 2003 season was the year that the Raiders and the Bucks played in the Super Bowl.
Gotcha.
And the center for the Raiders disappeared the night of the night before the game and didn't show up for the game.
Fun fact. And that's rumor too that like the coaching staff had the playbook, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So that was a pretty beefy round of 98s. So let's take a quick break and then we're gonna get in. We're in mid-season form already, my friends. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back. Our break music tonight actually is an honor. We're gonna use this a lot going forward. It's from our friends and Something Is Waiting, a Chicago new funk metal badass band. Shout out to Eddie and the boys. Something Is Waiting. So we'll see you in a minute. And riff. Gets better every week. All right,
I thought
so
he was gonna nail that one. I thought I was gonna do the whole thing. I got excited.
So we're dusting off the old Decision Bot 420,000, and we're gonna take a quick little jaunt in and go over our first Superflex FanDuel lineup of the year. So we're gonna hop in and we'll see you on the other side.
Hell yeah, this is 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 hell
yeah. We're back.
Tecuter has finished tecuting.
So let's talk a little bit about the Superflex lineup. This was actually like our most reliable cash last year. And now we have a third brain involved, so I'm looking forward to many grand rewards.
So sorry and you're welcome at the same time.
And so let's start with our stacks, because stacking in tournaments is so huge. We're stacking Justin Herbert and Mike Williams. What are your guys' thoughts?
I like it. Miami's, like you said, Miami's got one good cornerback, and that he's probably going to be on Allen. So let's exploit that.
It's also the time, too, that every Chargers receiver is healthy. So
yeah,
we should moonshot this shit as soon as we can.
Yeah, you know, right.
It also has the highest point spread, according to Vegas, out of any other game currently. So if Vegas is projecting more points, that gives us more opportunity to score points with their guys. And I think this is a nice week for Mike Williams to score a touchdown.
And that's a savvy read. That's a true degenerate read, Shane. Welcome. Our next stack, we decided to go Kirk Cousins, and we're stacking him with TJ Hockenson.
Hell yeah.
I am in love with TJ Hockenson this week, all over the place.
He's going to get 8 to 10 catches.
Like you said, dude, sun's going to sun, moon's going to moon. TJ Hockenson's going to go 8 for 85.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be sick.
His lowest target count last year was 6 with Minnesota. He was 3rd in tight end air yards last year. Like, he's going to get shine. And honestly, the Bucs have a pretty good run defense, and they have decent cornerbacks. So give me the guy that's going to be running free against linebackers and safeties.
Yeah.
Now,
that kirked up white boy going to cook this week.
Oh, man. If we win, I'm going to buy so much Patagonia. Like, he has no idea. We have two B's Robinson at our running backs.
Dude, this is awesome.
Yeah. Ryan, why were you pushing so hard for Brian Robinson?
All right. The Antonio Gibson show's over. Brian Robinson just looks so much better than Gibson. He's going to get way more chances. And as they were explaining to Shane earlier, the game script could get pretty ridiculous on this. Washington could go up by 20 points, and then they just run the entire second half. We see potential 100-yard, one-touchdown game from Brian Robinson.
I love it. All the lineups that I've made earlier this week on my own, I have quite a little bit of Brian Robinson exposure.
His easiest week, too, so we might as well capitalize on his easiest week that he can have.
So then, Shane, you were like, when we were pivoting at the end, you're like, what about Bijan? So why Bijan?
I don't think he's going to get the Gibbs treatment, right? Like, I think, as stupid as that says, week one, I think that offense is RPO heavy. I think they're going to kind of still ease Desmond Ridder into the NFL, because this is only, his fifth game starting. And I don't think Carolina's run defense is very good. Don't they have a guy sitting out, too, for contract dispute?
I think Burns is going to play, I think.
Okay. But, like, if Desmond Ridder can't throw more than 15 yards, they're just going to chunk plays out, and Bijan just going to rumble into the end zone at least once.
I think Bijan's a lock for 15 to 17 touches. And
the Vegas line, too. Even though the Vegas line for point total is low, Bijan's numbers are relatively high. I think his over was 69.5, and the line's at like 110.
And let me just check my phone here really quick. Oh, yeah, he's him. So he's going to do well. So then Ryan's big receiver push here is Chris Olave. Ryan, tell me about your love for Chris Olave.
I mean, I love him in general, but I thought we agreed we were doing this for Waleed.
This is an honorary Waleed Chris Olave play.
Right.
He's a deep ball guy, right?
Yeah, and I like Carr this week. FanDuel's got Tennessee ranked as the 32nd best defense against the pass. So let's crush some yards. I'm seeing a 100-yard game for Olave this week.
And Chris Olave being such a deep ball threat and Derek Carr being such a deep ball passer, it only needs to work once or twice and we're money.
Yep.
So then our last flex, since FanDuel is half PPR, we tend to focus a little bit more on running backs. We're going with J.K. Dobbins against Houston because he's going against Houston.
I just want any part of this heavily run themed team in Baltimore, and he's going to get his chances at the goal line for those touchdowns. He may not get a lot of yards, maybe 50, 60 yards, but he's got potential for 2 or 3 touchdowns, I think.
Get him into the end zone or get him into the red zone. That's all he's got to do.
Right.
Yeah. So that's our first Superflex lineup of the year. Shane, that was fun doing it with the third head. It's great to have a third perspective because usually it's just me and Ryan yelling at each other.
Well, it also helps too that I did my lines right. So my lines came into that logic of like where I was looking for holes and defenses and things to exploit. So it was kind of like a different perspective of when you get take lock, right?
Sure. Well, since you're talking lines, why don't you introduce your weekly fantasy segment?
So right, just to preface, if I gambled incorrectly, according to Sleeper Lines, I may have aimed a little too high on probability. So I'm sorry if I lose everybody money, but my project for this year, outside of doing the stuff before research, is to do 5 $1 bets on Sleeper just to see 2-leg parlays, just to see what happens based on spreads and stuff like that. So unfortunately you can't pair the same teams together on Sleeper when you do your picks. So you have to do
right.
Rotations. So my first line is when I locked this in on Tuesday is Michael Thomas over 3.5 receptions at 1.9 times on Sleeper. So okay. I'm not a Michael Thomas believer in drafts. I don't have any shares of him, but in the context of gambling, if we're playing game to game, I'm all in. In the 3 games Michael Thomas played last year, he averaged 5.5 catches per game. Granted, this was before the ascension of Chris Olave, but being the primary slot guy against the 21st ranked secondary per Warren Sharp, but according to FanDuel, 32nd, and 25th overall defense per Justin Boone against the Titans. I'm going to take this bet all day of he doesn't need to get yards, just Derek Carr can just offload to him.
Okay.
And the next one is also Derek Carr line. It was 20.5 completions at 1.93 time on Sleeper.
Okay.
So Derek Carr averaged 20 completions per game last year, but the games that drove down his average were games where he faced top 5 pass rushes, and we know that he doesn't like to get hit. So this is a tad more variable when it comes to that anomaly, but he's facing the 21st ranked secondary and the 23rd ranked front 7. So with the weapons that he has, I believe Carr has basically options all over the field where he can just kind of spread the ball around and exploit the defense.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you're not going to get any complaints from Ryan about a Derek Carr over.
Listen, no. I know we broke up with him, but I think we're back together. So
for now.
Yeah, for now. All right. My next one is probably one of the most like quote unquote risky plays according to Sleeper. It's Deebo Samuel with over 4.5 receptions at 2.07 times rate. So with the sample size of Deebo and Purdy, it's very small, like 3 games small. And that average was 4 receptions per game, but there's the caveat that Deebo was kind of hurt in this time frame. I've been banging the line. We've been banging the line that Deebo and Kittle do eat into each other's productions. And Kittle has kind of this ongoing groin injury. So he's still kind of up in the air for week 1. I know he's banged up, so he might be on a snap count. If he is live, you still have to play him in your fantasy lineups. But I still think that Deebo is going to get the ball thrown around a lot because the secondary is much worse in Pittsburgh compared to the front 7. So the passing attack is going to have to be exploited, even if that game is kind of lower scoring, in my opinion, of the way it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to throw the ball at least 20 times in this matchup to just not CMC.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like if Kittle's out, a Deebo reception line under 5 is money in the bank.
Yeah, for sure. All right. The next one is Javonte. This is over 0.5 rushing touchdowns at 2.67 times. So very Ooh. High rate. I don't like betting touchdowns because betting touchdowns is a non-sticky line. You don't know what's going to happen. But since the Raiders are so ass, having a bottom 3 defensive line and their star defensive lineman is sitting out, or he's had a medical issue or something like that. So he's not playing. I believe that this game is going to kind of get out of control by playing ball control, because I also think Sean Payton's kind of going to keep Russ on a leash to kind of be like, hey, this is going to be your easiest game of the year, so let's start it off easy. I know there is the concern of Javonte's snap share, but even if he sees like a 50% snap share, all he has to do is fall into the end zone. We saw his vertical speed is still where it was, but I don't know how about his lateral speed. So all he really needs is a hole. Someone's going to score on that offense. Jerry Jeudy said it, maybe. So he's only the weapon right now outside of Marvin Mims I would trust to do anything on this offense this year, or this week.
Sure.
The next one is Danny Dimes over 0.5 interception at 1.93. So even though Danny Dinero's did clean up his danger plays thanks to Daboll, they were a much lower passing volume team. So I don't think they're going to increase their amount of passes this year, but they did spend a lot of capital and a lot of money to bring in more passing receivers, because they basically have like 12 slot receivers. So which shows to me that they're going to pass the ball more. So with more attempts, that basically means Danny Dimes has the probability to regress to his mean. And when they're playing a top five defense and top five secondary in a divisional game in the first week, it kind of screams error occurring to me, especially when Danny Dimes didn't really play the preseason. So he might have a little bit of rest. Dallas picks him off at least once a year. It's just proven. And then I think in the first three games, he always throws a pick. So I would bet against Danny Dimes on this in this week. Next one is Jamar Chase over 6.5 receptions at 1.89. Chase averaged 7.25 receptions per game last year, half of which he played with a fracture in his hip. Cleveland has a 17th ranked secondary. This one feels real easy. I know we talked about Cleveland games getting weird, but Chase is him. I'm not really going to be worried about the dude who is the number one or number two receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, so if you put all five of those legs in a parlay and four out of the five hit, what's the one that fucks you up?
I think it's between two, honestly. I think it's between Debo and Javonte, because Debo is, I mean, granted, you can set these lines. The line will change according to when injury reports come out, but I think if Kittle is live, I think the Debo line gets a lot harder. And then obviously betting on a touchdown is very difficult.
True. All right. That was good. I like that.
All right.
Insight, fact-based. So now, shake it off. Got to get ready. It's the return of Ryan's mid-tier, kind of shitty, tight end of the week.
Of the week. Of the week. Of the week. Of the week. So let's talk about some guys that are super cheap on DFS that, unlike how Shane likes to not bet on touchdowns, I like to bet on touchdowns with my gut. These guys are going to save you some money this week and allow you to pay up at other higher-end positions and with the potential to score a touchdown, all right? I don't care if they get one, two, three catches. That's probably the most these guys are going to get, but one of those catches might be a touchdown. All right.
All right. A situation
I'm paying close attention to right now is the situation in Baltimore with Mark Andrews. If he does not suit up, and I think the injury to him, it says something like a quadricep injury. So it's not like anything was with his legs or anything. But, you know, if they're smart, it's Baltimore's first game of the season. If he's in any way questionable, they should just keep him out like Kelsey, like they did with Kelsey last night.
And even then, if he could be on a snap count too,
right?
Because they did fire their guy, so they might actually give a shit about their player health.
So one guy that I'm watching this week is Isaiah Likely at 4,700. Potential for a really good touchdown, especially if Andrew doesn't play. He's the number one then, and we all know that Lamar loves passing to the tight end. Potential saving money. All right. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's go to someone at 4,500 who has a chance to catch his first touchdown as a member of the Packers in the NFL. Let's talk about Luke Musgrave.
Let's go, baby.
You are the second person today. You and Zachy from the Discord have both said their DFS tight end play that they like this week is Luke Musgrave.
Nice. As we all know, the Bears, they're the Bears. They don't have that great of a defense. And I think this game could be a potential shootout the way Fields looked in the preseason. I think both teams have a chance to put up a decent amount of points, at least 3 touchdowns on each side. And I think one of them is going to go to Luke Musgrave. Oh, yeah, you're thinking like 10-7, Tony?
No, I'm thinking like I tried to look it up while you were saying it, and I wanted to see if I could get Robert Tonyan any cheaper, and he's actually $100 more. It's a Robert Tonyan revenge game, baby.
Oh my God, you're right. I didn't even think about
King,
that.
King of the Blob.
Blech. And he's back playing for a team that's in his hometown, too.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
I'm ready.
At 4,400. All right.
Oh God.
I know they're playing Baltimore, who has a historically good defense, but you've got a brand new quarterback in Houston who's going to be looking at most likely check down the ball all the time. They're not going to get crazy aggressive with him, be throwing a lot of deep balls. They're going to be super conservative with this new quarterback. And we all know that Dalton Schultz is now a member of the Houston Texans. But with Brevin Jordan out, guess who is going to snake one of Dalton Schultz's touchdowns?
Teagan Quatoriano.
Oh my God. Wait. Do you just wait? There's going to be a Teagan TD. All right.
Wow.
I don't care if it's only on one catch. At 4,400, if he gets you 7 points from one catch and a touchdown, it's well worth it for being able to pay up for the likes of like Derrick Henry or Jefferson or Chase. He's sneakily going to end up in one or two of my lineups for this week. Just you wait and see. So I kind of went super shitty. I didn't go mid-tier. I went super shitty this week.
You're digging.
Just on my gut, all right? So, yeah, that's my super mid-tier kind of shitty tight ends of the week.
We faded K-Dot, and thank God.
Yeah, no, I don't want part of that.
T. Deegan Quatoriano.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have replaced the Jamal Agnew line because it was mind-numbingly frustrating. But I wanted to keep it similarly challenging, right? Because, you know, that's how you sharpen the saw. So I am doing a new segment that is the Tony's Under 5K Extravaganza Play. And so anyone under 5,000 is fair game. 5,000 does not count. It's got to be under.
So 49 and below.
Correct. So to me, actually, like week one is great because there's rookies, right? And no one knows what to expect. So the call is obvious. It's $4,700 Marvin Mims.
Oh.
All right.
Whoa.
So I know on the surface it might seem like dynasty brain creeping into daily fantasy, but Mims is Denver's wide receiver 2 this week. It just is. That's just true.
Let's be real here. Number one talent, though.
Oh, for sure. And like, I'm not super high on a Russ bounce back this year, but I'll tell you what, like, I'm even more low on the Raiders defense. So like, I'm rocking with that. They tend to be missing a secondary. And with their best pass rusher out for mental health, like Russ is going to have plenty of time in the kitchen, man. So at 4,700, all I need is 10 points. That's it. And that's 2 catches for 30 yards and a touchdown. Easy peasy. My alternate option, my backup, would be a $4,800 Zach Charbonnet against the Rams.
I was going to say, it was going to be Sharbs, but he went with both of the guys, so it's cool.
And 40 yards and a touchdown makes it worth the cost of admission. Easy. And sure. If Ken Walker isn't the goal line back, or if he doesn't take a decent amount of the snaps, if it's closer to a 50-50 split than we think, that return on investment seems pretty fucking obvious to me.
Right. I should have started Charbonnet over McKinnon this week.
How could you have known?
I know.
All right. So now that we've got our segments out of the way, Ryan, let's go on a trip.
All right. Let's go on a trip this week, guys. I wanted to stay on the West Coast. All right. And I didn't use my normal way of finding these cities. Like the last few episodes, I've been locating cities on interstates or highways that have the number of episode run. Sure. But this week there was no like good 98s that I could find, or at least with some football relevance. There's is a highway 98, but there was nothing good. So I want to go somewhere that Shane lives close to and may have some stuff to add about this or tell me if I'm wrong about some of these facts that I looked up. But I want to go to the biggest city that we've been to so far in this geography segment. I want to go to San Diego, California.
Oh, okay.
Love San Diego. Love San Diego. All right.
And the reason I picked this city this week is because it was the site of Super Bowl 32. Let's see. San Diego. Some interesting facts we got about San Diego. I've actually been there before. I've been to San Diego. Never been to LA. I've been to San Diego, been to San Francisco. But the cool thing I got...
You can skip LA. You can skip LA. It's fine.
Yeah. The cool thing I liked about San Diego when I was looking up this stuff is I've actually been to the Coronado Hotel, which is the famous hotel down on the beach. Every celebrity, even presidents, have been to this hotel. At one time, the Hotel Coronado was the largest resort in the world. I believe that was back in the early aughts. Let's see. The California burrito was invented in San Diego, which is a burrito with French fries in it. I haven't tried it, but it sounds freaking delicious.
It's a great American classic.
Yeah.
Well, like you've hung out, Ryan, when I was living in that loft in DeKalb and you came out to watch the games, we went to Trace Burritos across the street and I grabbed a California burrito.
Yeah, I guess I just never realized that there was French fries in a California burrito before I looked up. So I probably would have ordered one somewhere, but I just thought it meant that it had avocado in it or something.
It does. It does have guacamole in it.
Because California famously grows 90% of all of Americans' avocados, and 60% of those come from San Diego County.
There you go.
The San Diego metropolitan area is actually a larger area than the state of Delaware. How about that? Jack in the Box, which I still have as a fast food chain I've never been to, was the first restaurant was in San Diego. One of not my favorite films, but a film I enjoy watching to this day, Top Gun, was filmed in San Diego.
Let me tell you, it's still prevalent there.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. A cool thing I found about, what's it called? Herbatology, or what's the study of trees?
Let me look.
Ornithology or arborology?
Dendrology?
So I knew about this because I follow golf, the PGA Tour and stuff, and there's a course in San Diego County called Torrey Pines. I never knew the relevance to this, but I guess there's only like 3,000 of these Torrey Pines left in the United States, and they're all in San Diego County. They can only be found there. It's one of the rarest pine species in America, and there's only like 3,000 left in the part of the Torrey Pines golf course. I thought that was cool.
Really expensive golf course to go to if you're if you're an out-of-stater.
Yeah, it's a place where they play. They have a tournament every year in the PGA Tour. So you're talking, you either got to be a member or you got to pay thousands of dollars to golf there if you want to golf there.
Sure.
Being that the city is so big, we've got a lot of famous people, all right, from the city. So I'm just going to run through a real quick list because there's a lot. I'm not going to spend too much time on these people unless I find some relevance. We've got Ted Danson.
Hey!
Cheers alumnus is from San Diego. We've got Cameron Crowe. You know,
wait, hang on.
What?
We got fucking Becker is from San Diego.
Becker's from San Diego. Cameron Crowe, famous director, you know, did Almost Famous. Yep. Reggie Bush, famous football player.
Naturally.
We've got Arian Foster, another famous football player. Also got Marshall Faulk.
Hey, back to the 90s Rams. Tie it in.
Yep. We've got Ace Frehley, the guitarist for Kiss. We've got Noah Bernardo, drummer from the band POD.
That is a San Diego band.
Tony Hawk is from this city.
Sure.
Great actor Dennis Hopper was born in San Diego.
Classic.
Also, one of my favorite comedians and comedic actors from a lot of movies, like Best in Show. Fred Ward is from this show.
Sure, Fred Ward is
from
classic.
From the city. Kellen Winslow. Ooh.
Senior, right? The dad?
Yeah, yeah. We've got Frank Zappa.
Oh.
Yep. We got Ricky Williams, famous running back.
A lot of weed in San Diego, too. Yeah.
We got Kenny Stills. We got Tony Romo. We got Carson Palmer. Jeez, a lot of football guys from this city. Rey Mysterio, the wrestler, is from this town.
Booyaka, booyaka.
619, baby.
We've got Eddie Vedder. We've got Tom Waits. Oh my God, we even have Ted Williams, famous baseball player.
Damn.
And we also have Ray Kroc, the founder of the Crocs. No, I'm just kidding. He's the founder of McDonald's. Was from awesome. Here. Gabriel Iglesias, comedian, Bobby Lee. Oh my God, so many famous people from this city. But what initially pulled me toward the city was Super Bowl 32. I don't know, is Qualcomm Stadium still there, Shane?
No, I don't know if they've completely demolished it, but it definitely is an abandoned site.
Okay. So Qualcomm Stadium is famously known in 1998. They hosted not only did they host the Super Bowl, but they also hosted the World Series in the same year. It's the only stadium ever to host two events like that.
Cool.
And that game, it was the Raiders against Denver. Or sorry, no, it was Green Bay versus Denver. And it was a great game. Denver won 31-24 and finally won their Super Bowl after appearing in four Super Bowls before that and losing. Denver snapped a 13 Super Bowl game losing streak for AFC teams. The AFC hadn't won a Super Bowl since 1983.
Wow.
Oh, and the Raiders won it in their famous 80s roster. They're in NFL history. Denver is only the second wild card team to ever win a Super Bowl in that year.
Good for them.
Yep. The Packers that year were the first team ever favored to win by double digits to lose a Super Bowl since Super Bowl IV.
Suck it.
Right? And sad note, Phil Hartman narrated the beginning parts of that Super Bowl, and as we all know, he died only 4 months later after that brutal wyvery.
You're like, sad note, I thought you were gonna be like, San Diego has been eradicated. On a sad note,
and another Tony probably knows this. I'm trying to wrap this up here, but there's just so much I found out about this town. Tony probably knows this as a part of history. Japan, during World War II, as retaliation and trying to attack America on the mainland that wasn't like a Hawaii or Alaska, they were famously going to attack San Diego. And get this, this would have been crazy. It was called the Operation Cherry Blossoms at Night. They were going to take kamikaze planes that were filled with infected fleas that had the plague and crash them into civilian population centers in the city, trying to spread the plague throughout the country. I did not know that. And this was supposed to happen on September 22nd, 1945. And obviously the Japanese surrendered earlier that year, so this obviously didn't happen. But if that would have happened, that would have opened a whole shitstorm for all this stuff.
Well, Camp Pendleton is down there too, and that was built in 90 or 42. Sorry, and that's like
one of the
bigger West Coast military.
Yeah, my cousin is a Marine, and he spent time there for a few years.
Well, you know, the Japanese did that in China.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, the most, as someone with a, you know, master's in history, the Rape of Nanking is without a doubt the most brutal exhibition of inhumanity in the history of humankind, I would say. Like,
really?
It was covered up for decades, and the woman who wrote the book, The Rape of Nanking, ended up committing suicide. She was so traumatized.
Oh my God.
I read that book and cried like a baby the whole time. It was nuts. And
holy
so
crap.
When the Japanese, well, this is before communism in China, so everyone was kind of disconnected, right? Like different areas didn't really have a unifying government. And so like the Japanese just bulldozed through that fucking country. And when they left, they killed all the crops, they killed all the livestock, and they left bottles of water that had plague bacteria in them for people that were like the survivors.
Oh my God.
Do you want to hear something nuts? There was a guy in Nanking that saved thousands of people's lives from the Japanese, and he was a member of the Nazi party.
What?
It was so bad that a Nazi was like, oh, okay, hold on here, guys. We're getting a little carried away.
Jesus.
Yeah, well, because he had a Nazi like badge, because he was a party member. So when he would see these inhumane acts, he would just flash the badge, and Japanese soldiers knew to just be like, yo, I'm not going to push this any further. On a lighter note.
Yeah, right. But on a lighter note, I'm sorry to turn this into a horrible history documentary, but
dude, we're three millennials with a microphone. We can do whatever the fuck we want. All
right, right,
right. Well, but that's San Diego. You know, host of Super Bowl in 1998, where they had the World Series and the Super Bowl in the same stadium
with California burritos.
That's right. I'm gonna get one of those. I want to find it.
And also, one of the players that is in our DFS lineup, Chris Olave, is from San Diego.
Oh, hell yeah. Guy.
And as if that wasn't enough, shout out, Shane will be down, Tim Lambesis from As I Lay Dying, who...
what? I saw them with you.
Hell yeah, you did. We went and saw As I Lay Dying.
It was like Rockford, right?
Yeah. And he's the one that tried to get a hitman to kill his wife.
Oh God.
If you ever talk to a hitman online, it's not a hitman. It's a fed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So on that note, let's call it a day. So we are a couple days away from week one. By the time you hear this, it will probably be too late for you to tune into Gamble Town on YouTube tomorrow. But enjoy week one. Hopefully your team makes it through, and we all convene here next week in a tone of celebration.
Hell yeah.
Enjoy your money, baby.
Yeah, so I'm going to sign off here and say goodnight.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.